Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Well, thank you all for being here so I can ramble on and answer some questions that have been asked beyond the week. This is my weekly show where I answer questions that have been submitted sometimes by, hopefully through Whitewater Guidebooks form, sometimes by text, sometimes by Facebook message or whatever. And I got three questions today. But before we start, I want to talk about these one-day rescue clinics that we're doing, because I'm also using this show as a chance to promote a couple things that we do here and there. I try not to do that too much, but I'm really excited about these clinics. And the idea with these clinics are that you don't want to take a whole rescue class, but you want some training. And I feel like a lot of people are intimidated to take a rescue class because they may not feel like they have a high enough level to be mixed with firefighters and river guides, or it's just too broad of a topic. Like, they don't want 3 days of a class. They just want to get good at swimming or just good at knots or just good at rescue, some topic or something. So this is an idea I've had for a while where we do just a one-day clinic. And you just pick the stuff you want to learn a la carte. Maybe you do 1 day, 1 year on tow tethers and swimming, and 1 day a year later on 3-to-1 mechanical advantage, and a year later on entrapments. So instead of doing a lot of stuff in 3 days packed in, you're just like get doing one clinic a year, just improving your skills, having time to think about it. That's the idea I've had for these clinics. And we put these together, and we're going to do 3 of them this year. And if they go well and everybody's like, yeah, that, I want more of that, we'll do more in the future. And if it's on our website under nwrafting.com, if you go to river training, you'll see safety and rescue clinics. And we're doing 3 when we have time in March, basically in March. The first one, March 7th, is on mechanical advantage and throwback. So we'll probably spend half a day on mechanical advantage, half a day doing throwback practice, go to the river, do a little bit of throwback practice. March 14th, we'll do talk about entrapments and rapids. So, like, people stuck. What if somebody gets stuck in like, you know, foot entrapment or their body gets stuck? We'll also talk about rapids. And then at the end of the month, we're going to do a day on whitewater swimming and harnesses. And again, this is just a la carte. If you want some training, there's not going to be any certification with it, but it will be with like real rescue instructors, not which it could be me, it could be somebody else, but we're going to have, it probably will be me teaching these courses. It'll be education, but not the whole thing. So if it's you're interested in it, look it up on our website, nwrafting.com. And with that, let's move on to our questions. So the first one is about static ropes with or without dry treatment. And the question is, since rope characteristics change when they get wet, when rope gets wet, it becomes heavier, stiffer, and loses significant strength and stretch. Is it a good idea to have static rope dry treated? So I don't know if I really have the answer to this question. First of all, I don't know for a fact. Well, when a rope gets wet, it gets heavier. That's true. Water gets in it. I don't know if it gets stiffer. It might lose strength. I don't know that for sure. Probably does. But I don't think it loses stretch. Stretch, I think, is a bad thing. So you're saying here it gets stiffer and it loses stretch. It can't do both. It can either get stiffer or lose stretch, but it can't be stiffer and have less stretch. Let's just say the characteristics change, though, right? And that's true. And so you're asking, is it a good idea to have static rope dry treated? I don't even know what dry treating is. I could Google it right now and find out. I'm not even sure what that means. I'm guessing. I have no clue what it is. I've never heard of this before. But my take is if you're going to have a throwback rope is throwback rope, and you can pull on rafts with throwback rope all you want. If you have a static line, like a real static line that you're carrying with you, which I recommend, I'm a big fan of like 3/8, or like say 5/16, and what size is that like? I think it's 3/8 and 7/16 inch rope, like thick ropes. Right, I like good, solid, thick, minimal stretch static lines. Is that you don't get them wet. I think that's a thing that is reasonable too. I keep my static lines in a dry bag. And so I know when you buy, like, if you buy the, your, let's go back here. If you buy your pin kit from NRS, Let's look it up. NRS pin kit. It comes in this bag that is not waterproof. And that's not really by the rope that comes with that's throwback rope. You can choose either an HTP static rope kit that costs $100 more. That's a better rope. That rope they show I would not use for pulling any kind of pin off. That's grab line. It's not good for pulling on. But if you have a real static line, you can see they have a mesh. Oh, hold on. It opened up in a different page. All right, everyone, let me move. Sometimes when you hit quick things, it opens up in the wrong page. This is the kit. That rope right there is a static line. I would not use that rope for pulling pins off. If you're going to buy this kit, which I would not recommend for a lot of reasons, but if you were to buy it, I would definitely get the HTP static rope kit for an extra $100. But it comes with this bag, and if your stuff's in this bag, your rope's going to get wet. And over time, it's just going to degrade it faster. It's getting wet, dry, wet, dry, wet, dry is not good for ropes. And so I would recommend if you're going to have a pin kit with a good static line, you protect that static line and you put it in a dry bag. So during your trip, it stays dry. And then when you're actually having to do an extrication with it, you really don't need that rope to get wet. It might get wet a little bit, but you throw a throw bag. Hopefully I can explain this well. If a boat's stuck in the river, you use a throw bag. You throw the throw bag over the raft. The person on the raft grabs it. Then you attach on you're on the shore. You attach the static line to the end of that throw bag rope. You tie a figure eight on a bite to both ends, put a carabiner in between. And you pull that static line across to the boat. The person on the boat is pulling on the throw bag rope. Take the static line over. The whole time, you're making sure that rope is high above the water. If that rope goes in the water, it's going to get pulled by the water and somebody's going to let go of it, potentially. So a big part of getting a static line to the raft is just keeping it out of the water, which means you're holding it up somehow. Maybe you have a paddle. A good way to do this is have a paddle with a prusik tied around the paddle handle and then a carabiner, and the rope goes through that, so you can hold it really high if you can, but you don't really want that rope to catch water. And then when you get it onto the boat and you pull it tight, it should be out of the water. There's no real good reason your static line should be getting wet. And I know a lot of people who suggest static lines say you want a waterproof static, waterproof is the wrong word, but you want a rope that's made for water, right? That might make sense if you're a swift water rescue team and you're setting up super complicated things to do body recoveries or to do whatever. But as whitewater paddlers, the main use of a static line is to pull on a raft. And that static line, if you're being careful and thoughtful, should really never get wet. Now, if it does get wet, it's not the end of the world. Right, and your rope might get a little heavier and stiffer or lose some strength. It might, but we should try not to let our static lines get wet. So that's a long way of me saying, if you have a static line, let's try to just keep it dry. And if it does get wet, hopefully it doesn't get super wet. Just get splashed on and moved on. And yeah, I would not dry treat my rope because I don't even know what that means, first of all. Second of all, it's going to cost money, and static lines are already very expensive. That's how I feel about that. If anybody has a different, I love having comments here. If anybody, knows what dry treating means and wants to throw it in the comments, that'd be sweet. Or if anybody else has an opinion about this, I'd love to hear it in the comments. Again, I just think that your static lines shouldn't be getting wet. For the types of things whitewater boaters are using static lines for, this shouldn't be a problem in my opinion. All right, moving on. Carabiner pulleys. Have you come across these carabiners yet? I just saw in a ski mentoring shop and thought it might be an interesting option for people who don't like carrying pulleys in the river. Who doesn't like carrying pulleys in the river? That's crazy. Yeah, I think these are cool. I have some right here. I keep them by my desk. I keep all kinds of cool tools by my desk. I'll show you all some. Because I'm always trying to geek out on the stuff and learn stuff. This thing's called a Kong. We sort of reviewed this in a video about a kayak pin, and I got one to try it out. And it's pretty cool. It's sort of like a pulley prussic thing. It's interesting. This is the old Tiblock. Is this called a Tiblock? I forget what it's called, but it's the pulley with the teeth grab that Petzl makes. I don't know. It's interesting to me. And I have two different kinds. Right? And I think these are pretty interesting. In my hard shell kayak, I carry one of these, I think a pulley as well, or at least one of these. So for like light duty stuff, which I'm usually around when I'm hard shell kayaking, in case I have to pull a kayak out or maybe help a raft. I'm not going to carry big expensive pulleys in my kayak, but I'll carry this because it's light, simple, easy to do. I would not use this for my raft pin kit. I don't think it's quite, I mean, this is minimal. If you're doing like light paddle boats, this might be minimal, but I'd rather go with real pulleys than this thing. But I've never used it in the field. I hope to someday to test it out, but yeah, I mean, it is what it is. It's a carabiner and a pulley mixed into one. Super simple. That's a unique thing. Like I said, all of my kayaks in the kit in the back of my kayak for first aid emergency stuff have at least one of these. So maybe someday I'll get to put it to use. Oh, Courtney's, help me out here. Dry tutor ropes are designed for ice climbing, alpine climbing, and mountaineering in any other wet condition. The dry treatment is added to keep the rope from absorbing water. Yeah, I wonder what they do. I wonder if it's like wax or something. It makes sense. It makes sense for alpine stuff. I don't know if it makes sense for water stuff. Thanks, Courtney. Okay, back to the questions. Yeah, so this is a cool option. This one here by Eldred looks really cool. I have these Petzl ones, but yeah, for light duty work, I think it's pretty cool. That's an interesting locking carabiner too. Eldred makes cool stuff. Okay, moving on. Donner und Blitzen River. Okay, I don't always read the questions ahead of time, but I did read this one because the title caught my attention. The Donner und Blitzen is this rarely ever run river in the Steens in southeast Oregon. And it first caught my attention when I read Soggy Sneakers. I first moved to Oregon in 2005, I think, and bought the book Soggy Sneakers. Back then, you read books to get beta. You didn't look at YouTube. And in the back of the book, it had like other eccentric runs. And one of them was called Donner und Blitzen. And the name immediately caught my attention. And I looked into it and I found that it only runs a couple days a year. It's very hard to catch it, maybe like 3 or 4 or 5 days a year. And so I've been on my radar for a long time. I love these kind of runs that are really unique, hard to do, rarely have water. And after an Oahu trip, maybe like 15 years ago, we got off the Oahu and I checked the levels and it was perfect. And I talked to one of my friends, Nate Wilson. He didn't want to do it. He was one of the guides on the trip. He was against doing it, but I did a lot of convincing. And we needed to use duckies that were at the bottom of the stack of rafts. So I had to pull them out of the hotel that night. And we drove to go do it. We drove from the hotel we were staying at. It was probably like an hour and a half to get to the Steens. And we get there at like, we get up early, stoked to go, and we get to a gate, and the gate's locked. And I didn't know about the gate. No description of the river had a gate in it. And so we obviously didn't go. And then like 5 years later, I saw there was good snowpack, and we went and did the North Fork of the Oahu first. And then I knew there'd be enough water for this. So we planned on hiking from that gate with things like 10 miles into the river. And the gate's open in the summer, but the odds of catching water and the gate open are very low. And so we brought super light pack stuff we used for the Chetco. And we planned to hike in from the gate on the pavement to the river and then run the river as a 2-day trip. And we thought we definitely planned it as an overnight trip because we thought we have to hike 10 miles in, maybe go like 2 miles in the river camp and then finish out. So it's a 17-mile run. And we get to French Glen, which is, I'll show a photo of that here in a second. I have some photos to go with all this. To the French Glen Hotel, we're talking to the guy who owns the place, and it turns out he has a key to the gate that he's allowed to share with people. I don't know if I should be saying this because I'm not sure he's still allowed to do it, but this was a while ago, and the BLM gave him a key. And so he gave us the key to the gate so that we could go into the river. We had to hike in and run the river. That's when we got to finally run the river, whenever that was, like 10, 15 years ago. So it's a long way of saying the Donner und Blitzen was on my radar for a long time. It's one of those I went one time, got turned around, I finally got to do it. It's really unique and special as a canyon, as a place, and because it rarely ever runs. So when I saw this as the subject line, I immediately read this. So thanks for sending this on to me and reminisce about the trip. I'll read the question here. I'm a longtime voter with Central Oregon roots. I love desert rivers, especially in Southeast Oregon, Southwest Idaho. Yeah, it's so cool over there. We've done a lot of the stems and tributaries of the Owyhee, Jarbidge, or Bruno rivers, but never done anything other than fish on the Donner and the Blitzen. I saw your trip report on this river and wanted to give it a go. What are some tips you might share when considering this run? Blitzen crossing to Paint Springs. That is the run. I know weather flows and obstructions can be very fickle. Do you recommend a 1 or 2 day trip? We use pack rafts or other small boats. Do you think IKs would be good to use? What minimal max flow would you suggest? Any hiking tips or treasures you can share? Have you found any river guides maps that are useful? I've seen a few accounts of descents, so I know of the few potential confrontations. Well, so let me go back and let's do a couple of things. First of all, I write river descriptions because I don't remember these things. Google Donner Un Blitzen kayaking. And if you do that, my description of Whitewater Guide comes up first. I write these. Does that have a year I did this in here somewhere? I don't know. I write these descriptions so that when people ask me 10 years from now, I don't remember things. I have something to reference. And so a lot of the answers to questions are here. If it's not here, I probably don't remember it. I'm going to try to answer your questions the best I can, but just know, like, and that's why I have all these descriptions. If you look at like Oregon especially, there's tons of descriptions. This is so that when I get asked, I just say, look at Whitewater Guidebook. I wrote this the week I got back. And it was fresh in my mind. I added the photos then. Sometimes I lose the photos. So look here first. That's a good place to look. But let me answer your questions, and I'll do a little slideshow of the photos I found. So do you recommend a 1 day or 2 day? I mean, always longer. Like, I'd recommend 3 day. The longer you can spend there, the better. One day would be rushed. It's a lot of river to do in 1 day. We'll use pack rafts or other small boats. Cool. I think it's a little rocky for pack rafts. Pack rafts will be fine, but you're going to hit your butt a lot, depending on the flow you have. I would use a ducky or a hard shell, but I know pack rafts. People love the pack rafts, so whatever. You think IKs would be good to use? That's what we used. I think IKs would be great because there's potentially wood. And so when there's wood, I love duckies because you can jump in and out of them really quickly over hard shells. It's, you know, this river's not even done once a year. And so there's going to be wood. You don't know where it's going to be. Being ready for wood is helpful. I think a ducky will run this better than a pack raft. So I'd choose a ducky. Do you think IKs we get? What minimal max flow? I put on that page 600, 800. You could maybe go lower, maybe go higher, but that's why I wrote that page, to like write what I thought at the moment. I would go based off whatever on the page. Any hiking tips or treasures you can share? No, not really. If you fish there, you probably know more than I do. I think where we camped, I did a cool hike out of the canyon, which was kind of fun, but nothing I can remember. Have you found any river guides or maps? No, there's nothing. When we did it, all I had was soggy sneakers. I mean, that's back in the day when we boated, all you had was a book with a page, like flows, a quick story about the river. Like, the fact that you have this Whitewater Guidebook description is that I've done is miles above anything I ever had. So I don't think there's anything out there on this. I've seen a few accounts of descent. Okay, cool. So hopefully I answered your questions there. Fun fact, and this is in, let me go back to the page. Let me see if I still have a page up. Fun fact, I learned this, and I'm pretty sure it's true. I'm sure what to put here. Prince Helfrich did the first descent, you can see I put it right here, in a drift boat back in like the 50s. That's insane. You need a lot of water to do it in a drift boat. I just heard that as a rumor, and I put it here. I know the details, but I heard it from a good source that Prince Helfrich did the first descent. Okay, so to go along with this, though, I thought I would share some photos. I actually went through my photos today and uploaded them to Flickr so they would exist so people could see them in the future. So I have a Flickr account, for those who know what Flickr is. and I put them up here. Can you see these? Yeah. I make them, so I'm gonna make them bigger. Make the screen smaller. I guess that's as big as I can make the photos. Yeah. Anyway, this is, I'll do a quick slideshow for those of you interested. This is the French Glen Hotel. French Glen is the middle of nowhere, Oregon. This is right by Malheur. It's a Malheur National Preserve where they had the guys break into the BLM building and live there for a while. This, we were there a year after that, a year or two maybe. Oh, it doesn't have the date. Yeah, 2017. So the Malheur thing, I think, was around then. When was the Malheur? I'll Google it later. Anyway, we did this in 2017. Tiny little town, probably most famous because of that, that everybody who took over that BLM site there. And this is where we stayed for the night before we went, and we would hang out with the owner, and he told us he had the key, which was super nice. I'm not going to promise he's going to have the key again because I heard some people went back since and he didn't have the key, but it helped us. And this just gives you a sense of what it looks like. It's just barren out there and until you head into the Steens, which are stunning. If you've never been to the Steens, they're worth a visit. They're really cool. And this is where we put it. I think this is called Page Springs. Is that right? I don't know. It has a name. I think this is Page Springs. Anyway, it's a bridge across the Donner-Blitzen. If I remember right, you're actually on the South Fork of the Donner-Blitzen here, and it meets the or the maybe this is the Little Donner-Blitzen. This is kind of a tributary, and then you get more water downstream a little bit. And this is just like maybe a couple hundred feet below put in, just kind of, you know, what you'd expect, low water, brushy. And then it kind of picks up, enters this really cool canyon. Night, just really fun rapids, just nice technical class three. There's a few class fours, remember, right? Like this is probably a class four. And again, beautiful canyon. Lots of technical rock dodging. Quite a bit of wood. This wood's not in play, but we were on our lookout for wood the whole time. Again, the advantage of a ducky, like if that's my friend Dan, if he sees some wood downstream, he can just jump out pretty quick and get to shore. You're not like in a hard shell, which it's a bit harder to get out. I really, when there's unknown wood, I prefer a ducky. Start our camp where we camp. We were, all of the stuff we have is ultralight. That's an ultralight tarp because we were planning to hike in 10 miles to do this. So this is all hyperlight stuff, those air back rafts that are super light. We had our dry bags are probably, I think over here, this is a hyperlight backpack. Like we were geared up to hike in 10 miles to do this. So everything's super light. There's our camp again. I think that Yeti cooler we weren't planning on bringing, but once we realized we had the key, I think we added that. I mean, we have titanium pots in here, whisper light stoves, like all the super light stuff. I think we all, that one tarp we all slept underneath. Then back on the river and just classic fun class three. Like this is probably a four. There was some stuff that like this was probably four, but you know, generally three plus a little bit of class four. And that's my last photo. Just awesome canyon. So I don't know. I get obsessed over trips like this. I really, you know, this is what drove a lot of my boating for a long time was going to rarely seen rivers. And this is one of Oregon's 58 wildly scenic rivers. So one of the things, or was 58, now it's 68. Oregon, wild and scenic. One of my goals is to see all of Oregon's wild and scenic rivers. See if I can find this page. Let's find, continue to cite. So this is a website I've come up with to sort of me document the wild and scenic rivers I've visited. It kind of keeps me, like, I need to have goals like this. I need to have, like, something for accountability. So I created this website. It's just OregonWildAndScenic.com. And it has descriptions of the rivers I've been to and the ones I haven't. And the Donner-Blitzen was one of them. And it was the 12th one I visited. Here's the write-up I did with one of those photos. But I get very motivated to do these rarely done rivers. And especially if they're wild and scenic. You know, Oregon has 68 wild and scenic rivers. I think the next number one state has is California with like not 20, maybe 15. I can't remember. Some number that you're like, wow, that's way less. And so it's a big goal to do all the rivers. Oregon had 58 rivers. Now it's 60. So there's 10 more I have to do beyond the original ones. Anyway, enough about that. So hopefully I answered your questions about the Donner-Blitzen. It's one of those trips where it's the middle of nowhere. It's the middle of nowhere It's hard to get to. Lows are hard to find. You need to find a team of people who have the skills. But if you can pull it off, it's very, very, very rewarding. Very rewarding. So that's it on that. And I think that's our last question. So I'm going to go back and look at one comment, and then we'll close this show down. Vince says, thanks for explaining how to use and keep a dry, keep dry static line for raft extraction. Yeah, no problem. It's pretty straightforward, but I think it's important. I think one important thing gets overlooked is your rope should be in a good dry bag. And I would say a watershed bag, even if it's in like, if you put it in like an NRS dry bag, or like NRS is the wrong, a Sotar dry bag, or just a regular like roll top dry bag. Those dry bags aren't usually that dry. You want a high quality dry bag for your static line. So I'm a big fan of putting static lines in dry bags to keep them dry like all the time. And then that 3 hours every 5 years you use it, just keep it above the water and it should be in good shape. All right, well, that's this episode. Thank you all for watching. We'll probably do another show next Tuesday. And so if you have questions, please go to whitewaterguidebook.com. And I just want to do one more plug at the end of the show for those of you who were here at the beginning to check out our one-day safety classes that we're doing here, river training, safety and rescue clinics. They're just a la carte, one-day things, with one-day classes with just one topic or two topics. So if you don't need a whole rescue class, but you just want to cover a couple of topics, that's the whole point of these one-day clinics. So think about joining those this spring. We'll be doing them in March. And with that, I'm going to end the show. See you all next week.